Chapter 27. Tessa's Compound, Bermuda. Kurt stood over the security guard whom he'd thrown to the ground while raising his hands, not wanting to be shot by the second guard. "Sorry about that," he said to the first guard. "You surprised me, and I reacted out of instinct." He offered a hand. "No hard feelings?" While the officer on the ground looked wary and confused, the second man was downright hostile. "Stay where you are," he shouted, his weapon drawn and aimed at Kurt's chest. "Relax," Kurt said. "I'm a lover, not a fighter." "Just keep your hands where I can see them." Kurt raised his hands, and the man on the ground got up and backed away, grabbing Kurt's waterproof pack for good measure. "Let's see what's inside." "Be careful," Kurt said. The man unzipped the bag, rummaged through one pocket, and then opened the main section of the pouch, pulling out a handful of melting ice. "What in the world?" The sound of a sliding door opening violently stopped him from searching deeper. All eyes turned, and Kurt saw his deliverance, Tessa Franco, stunning in a beaded evening gown, casting a reflection that danced in the soft evening light as she walked barefoot across the veranda. Her eyes were wide as she approached, her face slightly flushed. She was spellbinding. "What exactly is going on out here?" "We caught him before he could get to the house," the security guard said. The question wasn't meant for him. Tessa was staring directly at Kurt. He shrugged. "I asked if you'd see me earlier tonight. You suggested perhaps another time. So, here I am." "I did suggest another time," Tessa replied. "But this is decidedly not another time. This is, in fact, the exact time I told you I wouldn't be available." Kurt glanced at the security guards, who were rapidly getting the idea that he wasn't a burglar or an assassin. He lowered his hands and turned back to Tessa. "True," Kurt said. "You were supposed to be otherwise engaged this evening. But plans have a way of changing, and I was confident that yours would. After all, your last text referenced fate, and I'm confident that fate meant for us to be together."
"You must be insane," she replied. "Did you swim out here from Hamilton?"
"No," Kurt said. "My yacht, the Lucid Dream, is anchored out in the Sound."
"Well, you got all that exercise for nothing," she said. "There haven't been any changes to my plans. Now, if you'll kindly..."
As she was talking, her digital watch beeped, flashing brightly as it delivered a message. Tessa rotated her arm and read the words flowing across the small screen. Kurt couldn't see them, but from the look on her face, he knew Joe had succeeded in diverting Oliver Warren and sending him home to regroup. He tried not to look too pleased. Tessa read the message twice, tapped the screen to send off a preset reply, and then paused. For several long seconds, she stared into the distance before slowly turning back to Kurt.
"I don't know whether to be aggravated, offended, or flattered," she said.
"I'm feeling a little bit of each, to be honest." "Why don't we discuss your feelings over a drink?" he replied. Careful not to startle the guards, he reached toward the waterproof pack and pulled a bottle of chilled champagne from inside. Tessa took a good look at the bottle and then turned back to Kurt. The tension left her forehead and the corner of her lips turned up ever so slightly. "The driven soul will always succeed," she said, quoting him from earlier in the evening. "Apparently, you're a very driven man, Mr. Hatcher. Just how did you persuade Oliver Warren to break his date with me? He was very keen on being the first to talk business."
"I had nothing to do with it," Kurt said. "Fate must have intervened. Now, shall we have a drink to fate? And anything else we can think of?" He offered the bottle for her approval. "Paul Roget," she said, studying the bottle. "Favorite of Sir Winston Churchill," he added. "Another driven soul." She studied the bottle and the label. "What year is this?"
"It was bottled for Churchill in 1940 as a celebration of his becoming Prime Minister of England," Kurt said. "I recovered it from a wreck off the coast of Ireland. The seal has never been broken."
"You recovered it?"
"Like you, I'm interested in history," Kurt said.
I've salvaged a few ships in my time. Like you, I'm interested in changing the world. Unlike you, I prefer to remain anonymous. I think we might make a very good team. The smile grew, making her lips seem fuller. She turned to her security team, who were standing there dumbfounded. Gentlemen, you can leave us now. The men nodded and walked off. You're not exactly dressed for dinner, she said. Drinks by the pool? Which means I'll have to change. Don't, Kurt said. You look stunning. And if we go for a dip? We can worry about that later. An hour later, the $20,000 bottle of champagne was empty, replaced by a rare bottle from Tessa's own private collection in a silver bucket of ice. The new offering was almost as expensive, if not nearly as exotic, as the Paul Roget 1940. By now, talk of business and investments had given way to talk of changing the world. The difference between you and me is obvious, Kurt said. You want to change the world for the sake of changing it. I'm only interested in change if it makes money. Lots and lots of money. You're not making money at this point, or you wouldn't be looking for investors. We will be soon, she said. Price of oil is climbing. Supply is dropping. Demand is increasing. All at the same time. That combination of factors will propel Novum Industria to become one of the largest corporations in the world. Invest a billion. You'll have 10 more by the end of the decade. Kurt poured more champagne. That certainly qualifies as a lot of money. But every alternative energy company makes the same promise. Plenty of them have gone bankrupt doing so. I'm already wealthy. Why risk it all on something so unproven? Because that's how we keep score, she said. That's greed, Kurt said. With that, Tessa pushed her chair back and stood. I make no apologies, she said briskly. I mean that as a compliment, Kurt said. Without a little greed, we'd still be living in the Dark Ages. Kurt put his glass down, stood, and stepped toward her. Now tell me about your technology. Is it real, or just pie in the sky? I'm not sure you'd be able to understand the technical explanation, she said. Try me, he said, moving closer. I'm not that intoxicated, she replied. You can see the designs after we have an agreement in place. Wise, he said, moving even closer. He put his hand softly on her cheek, brushed her hair back, and kissed her. Her lips tasted of champagne. Her hair had the scent of jasmine. So, if you can't show me your technology, what can you show me? Why don't we start with that swim?